You got that there was only very few persons left. You didn't realize that there was four more coming yesterday, one more today, or five more. So it is going to be more than yesterday. And question number eight is, any references have been made to heedfulness and control of self, family, and society? What is the role of Dhamma in governing society? What good does the Dhamma provide to Catholic people? And should Dhamma practitioners be involved in politics? And let's go to reflect on this. That is, try and think about those people who are successful in various aspects of life, such as education, business, politics, healthcare, and so on. They are better than others, but it caused life in Abhimana, giving hatefulness, not forgetting, not failure, to abstain from what should be abstained, and to observe what should be observed. Then there will be no harm, or it will be beneficial. And it is concerned with all aspects of life. Such people are not ordinary people, they are diligent and helpful, heedful people. In this connection, during the Buddha's time, when King Kosala approached the Buddha and asked this question, what is that one thing which contributes to the welfare in his very life and the life after? And the Buddha answered, Appamada. Not to forget or fail to what should be done, and not to forget or fail what should be abstained. In any walk of life, everybody wishes to live healthily and be fulfilled with good conditions, such as food, clothing, and shelter, and wish to enjoy life fully. And also, one step further, wants to be able to realize welfare and prosperity both in this world and the world after, both in the mundane field and also super mundane spiritual field, in all aspects of life, such as education, business, and so on. And there's one thing which is responsible for this, namely abhimana, diligence and heedfulness, and abstention and observation. In other words, one should be mindful. And there are two kinds of mindfulness. One is to be mindful beforehand, in preparation for one's work, and the other one is heedfulness or diligence in the course of the practice. If we discuss about this, it's going to take 1 hour or 1.5 hours, and it won't be enough to discuss the subject. Not to forget or fail in the practice of these 10 courses of meritorious action, beginning with dana, sila, bhavana, reverence, service, giving service, rejoicing in the good actions, and listening to the talks, dhamma talks, discussion, and giving dhamma talks, and holding right views. In this way, there are 10 courses of meritorious action. And whoever the Buddha, all Buddhas praise such people, people who never forget these 10 causes of meritorious action, which can purify one's physical, verbal, mental behaviors. And for such people who are diligent, will realize, are said to be wise people, who can realize benefits both in the present and future existences. This Kusala performance, not forgetting, not failing in performing wholesome deeds, is concerned with the society. The Buddha has said that mindfulness is required in everything, both in the household and deeds. So when you say everything means, it is both in worldly and spiritual matters, in any planes of existence. And this Dhammata state, namely Appamada, is involved. When one undertakes the practice, one is bound to the unusual from ordinary usual status. Just imagine when you are practicing in a small way, there is small transformation, small improvement. If you practice in a considerable way, there is a considerable improvement. And if you practice in a satisfactory state, there will be satisfactory improvement. There's no denial about that. And as all yogis confess, that they experience real transformation with the practice of meditation. There are these immoral deeds known as dulcharitas and moral deeds, sucharitas. The first one are things which should not be done, and the second one is things which should be done. They are opposite to each other. And as for these dulcharitas, they are like poison. They have to be abstained, and as much as you abstain, it's going to be beneficial, so that you will not be defiled. At the same time, you will be safeguarding others, and you will be free from these undermining elements, and you are uplifting yourself. At the same time, you are not transgressing, not committing unwholesome deeds to others. By just doing one thing, you are accomplishing two things at the same time. If one is transgressing, that means such a person is a foolish person. And if one is doing unwholesome deeds, transgressing others, or committing these deeds towards others. Even if you are doing something good, if you do excess, then it's going to be harmful, like taking food. Although food is beneficial, there's a limit in taking food. In the field of practice also, if you are practicing the three trainings are good, but if one is in excess, it may not be good. So, whether it is unwholesome deed or wholesome deed, even if it is wholesome deed, if you do it in excess, then it is not desirable. One has got to control it with mindfulness. Without mindfulness or heedfulness or diligence, it is like not putting any salt in the food. Self has three kinds of conduct, namely conduct for the welfare of the world, that means for all beings, and for the relatives, and also for the welfare of all beings, with compassionate feeling. In addition to the Satipatthana Sutta, what six other suttas would you recommend I study? Perhaps this is more a personal question pertaining to my own group, or perhaps it would be for the group. The next question is, can medicine influence meditation? Can also homeopathic medicine affect the meditation? What is with etheric oil or mosquito repellents? As a prevention, it can be used, any medicine or any spray, but as yesterday said, one should not break the precept which if you commit these five conditions that we mentioned yesterday, it is not nice to go and spray and kill purposely mosquitoes and other insects. You can do what is important is the motivation. Not that means to have the motivation to kill these insects. And if it's just for prevention, it is all right. But if the insects come to this spray, then you can't help it. But you should not have any intention to kill these insects. Sometimes patients, when you have to apply medicines or injections, things like that, which will kill some microbes or worms, they are poisonous, but you should not give them with the intention of killing them, but your intention should be to relieve the patient from suffering. And of course, as a result of this medicine, some microbes might be killed that you cannot help. So monks, they have to be careful in drinking water. They use a filter, a cloth filter, to remove seen insects which can be seen. But there are many unseen insects or microbes in the water, and what to do with them. We have to consider them as some kind of elements instead of as living beings. The 11th question is, there are times, practice, when the knowing mind stands out very clearly from the object, that is knowing, in a wide field of changing objects, being known, it can appear that the knowing consciousness does not arise and pass away with the objects, but remains stable and steady. At other times it is clear the knowing consciousness arises and passes away, concurrent with the objects. Can you please explain? We have talked about this Kanika Samadhi. As we note, the arising object every second has one deep end concentration. There's a momentary concentration becomes powerful enough to calm the meditative mind. And although objects change, the concentration is one continuous, so that it appears as one, like a stream of water. Although old water gives place to the new, it looks like it is the same water in the stream. So when Kanika Samadhi is strengthened, although the objects change, concentration remains like in one plane or just continuous plane. In the earlier insight knowledge, one can only observe the changing, the rising and passing way of the objects noted. Only in the later or higher insight knowledge that one sees the noting mind rising and passing away, especially at inside stage of dissolution of objects. One sees the rising and passing away of the noting mind. As has been given during the talk on Bodhicitta Dhammas, enlightenment factors, as a result of piti patati, rapture and tranquility, there is change in the phenomena, in the physical phenomena, in the body. There is a changing of this excellent materiality, in that the blood also is involved. Blood becomes clear, and this clear blood circulates through the body, and in this way, diseases can be cured. In the literature that one has the tender insight knowledge, there's not enough concentration, then one can become very weak with the practice, tired, become tired physically and mentally, and one may sweat and become heated throughout the whole body with some radiation from the head, becoming restless, worrying what one might get disease or one might die. This is the kind of thinking. This may be a kind of thinking, and one has got to be patient and continue to activate mindfulness.
Hello,
Mahamudan is able to bear his pain and continue to note as one deepens one's concentration. One will only know just pain as pain, and it will rise and pass away. And with the strength of concentration, one will be able to cultivate knowledge, and one will only see just the pain, not the location, not the form, nor manners, just the intrinsic nature. One will be able to note in a pleasant manner, without any restlessness. There may be physical tiredness, but no mental distress. There will be resilience, and it becomes a pleasant pain. Later, one will be able to challenge any other pain that may come. One comes to possess courage. Next question is, when I look at certain objects, I can see tiny particles of color coming and going. Is this the arising and passing away of the visual object, or of seeing consciousness, or something else? It may be just perception, and not the real ones. It is just thinking, which form in the mind, visual objects. They're conceptual objects. Conceptual objects don't arise and pass away. Only the ultimates arise and pass away. Only when one cultivates higher knowledge, with the momentum of this knowledge, lights and illuminations may appear. They, of course, arise and pass away. They are ultimates. The ultimates only arise and pass away. So at that time, they are the real objects, which are the lights. And the noting mind also is the ultimate object. So both these objects and seeing consciousness are the ultimates at that time.
Okay.
This is a question. During medium deep concentration, the rise and fall seem to snap away so quickly, and clearly it is as though they never existed. At this time, consciousness seems to fall asleep very briefly without dreaming. Is this temporary cessation of the noting mind and its object? Most of the practice, one may miss his mindfulness, so they have to be very careful not to happen like this. There are six causes for losing mindfulness or unconsciousness, losing consciousness. And that is, namely, due to PT, rapture, due to passivity, tranquility, due to concentration. And while noting in a very easy way, in a comfortable, casual way, or due to sloth and torpor, or due to restlessness, not being activated on the object. Loss of consciousness, I might say, or loss of mindfulness, is due to PT, not necessarily due to, in the course of the practice, but in ordinary life also, one can become unconscious or loss of consciousness temporarily when one is successful in any event, sudden success, or one got some properties, win lottery for instance, one become rapturous, joy, so one can lose consciousness temporarily. When one feels calm in both body and mind, there can be instantaneous loss of consciousness. Just like when you are shouldering very heavy burden and suddenly you drop down, then you feel relieved, there can be sudden or instantaneous loss of consciousness. Either another reason is due to upekkha, balanced or neutral mind. At times you feel neutral or nodding in a very casual, easy manner. You may lose for one or two moments of mindfulness. Excessive samadhi, instead of being balanced with energy, at first there was a balanced energy and concentration. Later on, there was too much concentration and less energy. And due to excessive concentration, one can become slothful and sleepy. The mind becomes slimy at that stage. In the beginning, one is aiming properly. Later on, one becomes very casual, like reciting certain literature or verses, just reciting already recited with ease. Another time, when one is noting, the noting mind is not fixed on the object. Instead, it is escaping from the object. And such kind of, in such a situation, restlessness, there can be this sudden loss of consciousness. As one cultivates inside knowledge and coming to the maturity of the practice, reaching from process to non-process, there can be this cessation or loss of consciousness. That is realizing the inside knowledge. Gaining insight. The next question is, how does a yogi know she has got inside knowledge or not? In this center, she will know from the instruction teachers or by his own judgment with the Dhamma mirror. Just like a traveler, when one is traveling along the path, although one is going along the right path, there are some transit camps in between while going towards the destination. At times, one may go the wrong way. As for the traveler, he or she will not know. Sometimes some transit camps are very similar, some are different, and some are unusual. So too with the practice of the yogi. Although one is practicing walking the path, along the path, one does not know at which stage one has come to. And they may come to a certain stage, but they cannot name it. Is it ordinary one, or unusual one, or very unusual one? Is it a good one, or a bad one? In this way, one is not fully aware of the status which one has become, one has come to. If one, especially if one is not versed in the theoretical aspect, literary aspect of the practice. And the next question to that is, if one yogi says he has got some inside knowledge, it means he has got that inside knowledge for all the time, or just at the moment with full mindfulness while practicing. Unless one has come to the real realization of Nibbana, one may lose this inside knowledge if one has reached to that stage, any time in this lifetime or even in the life after, so long as one is still, one has not realized this permanent path. Of course, when one becomes, one reaches a super mundane path, as Suratana for instance, he or she will practice from the stage of instantaneous arising and passing away, from that stage. Because one has already seen the mind and body, so one has overcome the view of self also, the personality view. And because one knows the cause and effect, one has overcome doubt, skeptical doubt, and because one has realized the universal characteristics of psychophysical phenomena, having become a super, having reached this super mundane path, one's knowledge or inside knowledge is said to be permanent. That means when one tries to recollect or review, then this knowledge will come back anytime or easily, not like ordinary beings. So we can say that such a person will not lose this inside knowledge as regards the three universal characteristics, impermanence and so on. And one inside knowledge is said to be permanent for such people, for such persons. To undertake the practice of meditation to eradicate all defilements, like ordinary persons, the only difference is he realizes very quickly. He progresses from one super mundane path to another stage of super mundane path and the fruit of his path. And finally, when at the stage, the final stage, he has to eradicate, like to say eradicate, the defilements which have not been eradicated by the first three paths. And that there was the defilement called moha, delusion. I mean deluded, a lack of clarity about the truth, not knowing the truth, knowing in the wrong way. And once he overcame that, he was able to realize his omniscient knowledge, knowing all beings to be known. Noble, all noble things are known to him, and he would never lose that, that knowledge. But is it all the time? Is he knowing all the time? That's not so. Only when he gives attention, or only when he brings it to mind, that this will appear in his mind, in his knowledge. That means he knows it. Not all the time. So in this initial also, once the yogi has realized the supermundane path, because one has seen the impermanent nature and so forth, the three characteristics about the psychophysical phenomena, this kind of knowledge is permanent in him or her. So once he or she pays attention, he or she is bound to know or remember these characteristics. But is it all the time in his or her mind? Not so. Just like the omniscient knowledge of the Buddha, only when one pays attention, one will realize or one will know, or one will bring to memory these three characteristics.
Buddha.
Just like a guide, naming the transit camps through which the traveler passes through, that is can is called so and so, that can is called so and so. So to with the practice. The as for the practitioners, there is no customarily the meditation teachers would not identify or judge to which inside stage the yogi has come to. It is only when the yogi listens to this Dhamma Dhyasa, Dhamma Mira, can one make one's own judgment. As it says, Atinova Atunam Jagriya, one decides one's own status by oneself. And in this way, Dhamma Dhyasa, Dhamma Mira is the only means by which one decides, one makes judgment by oneself. to fear to be reborn as a deva, but to fear of rebirth in. The last one is that should the yogi have fear of being reborn as a deva as a consequence of his arthritis, as a deva, there will be little motivation to practice. Not to fear to be reborn as a deva, but to fear of rebirth in the states of loss. Just like people enjoy sense of pleasures in this world, in this plane of existence, so too in the deva world there can be a lot of enjoyment. And if one is reborn as a deva and be immersed or sunk in this kind of sense of enjoyment, then when one's body breaks up and dies, one can fall into the states of loss.
Yoga is very to be come
on, not reasoning of even if born from sense of pleasures, not seeing the flaws of sense of pleasures. But not with the state of one's behaviors as regards sense enjoyment, even in the realm of human beings. If one is not able to control one's behaviors, it is frightful, fearful. Especially in advanced countries, the high thing they are living, how they are living, how they are enjoying, and how they, what the reason, and trying the reasoning that one should enjoy one's life while living in this place of life. So even if they are enjoying in a bigger way, if one goes to the excesses, it is not nice, it's not desirable. Because sense pleasures are dangerous, they are fatal, and those who don't realize this are bound to suffer. Even if one is reborn in the human world, there can be this danger if one does not practice the strain of sense of pleasures in the deva world as well, as much as in the human world. Those people who are not able to restrain their behaviors, those who are not content with self-control, and they are bound to enjoy the sense of pleasures, whether it is in the deva world or the human world, these kind of pleasures are dangerous and fatal. So once it's given out that they are not desirable, then once it's even eradicate these desires. And for those people, they will not be happy with the person, whether they are in the deva world or in the human world. So that if one has to realize the practice of the Dhamma, then one is bound to suffer. So that is the practice of the Dhamma, so that one is free from this dangerous and fatal happiness and be able to realize the safe, secure kind of happiness.
I believe I told you.